Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Mark Wolgenrich now joins us, who was not with me at the basketball game last night. Sir, welcome. I'm glad you got back safely.
Appreciate it, Steve. Thanks so much. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, too, my friend. It was great to see you out there.
Yeah, it was.
As with your usual great coverage, by the way. Manny Diaz had an opportunity. I think there were a couple of defining moments this season, quietly. One was the speech that P.J. Mustipha made to the team after the Ohio State game that really resonated with the players. The other was the great conversation you had with Manny Diaz, where he talked about the heart-to-heart he had with his players after the Michigan game. What resonated with you about that conversation you had with Manny?
It was reminiscent in a way of like 2016 with Manny. You know, Manny obviously has no tie to that season 6 years ago, but there were, you could pull out some threads of a similarity in that there was kind of like this, you know, after the 2016 game, the Penn State at Michigan, I remember the players talked about on the plane. I think Trace McSorley said stuff like, you know, we had to decide what direction we were going to go in. And that's exactly what Manny said in California about that game. It was interesting. I remember, like, James Franklin after the Michigan game said, we need to get bigger, we need to get stronger up front, especially, you know, on the defensive line. And Manny said, you know, we watched the film, and it wasn't necessarily that. It wasn't necessarily size that did us in that game. It was more trust. It was more players not that they don't trust the system, but that they weren't doing the things they were supposed to be doing, so everybody else didn't have trust that somebody was going to be in the right position. Simple things like that. So, you know, filling gaps, you know, manning your responsibilities, not trying to freely have to play. And that was where his conversation came to. That was the time we heard, you know, during the season that the defense kind of watched that film as a unit. And then they came out of it, and Manny Diaz says, okay, where are we going to go? Which direction do you guys want to go in? Do you want to play the defense that we're going to play, or do you want to go freelancing all over the place? And I saw what happened after the fact. Even, you know, even in that Ohio State game, for the most part, you know, short field touchdowns, things like that, still were pretty good. And for the rest of the season, besides, you know, a couple of lapsed tackles here and there, and especially when we're a little bit in the Rose Bowl, they were on point. I mean, they did things that they were supposed to do. Pretty much everybody seemed to be doing what they were supposed to do. And I think the one guy you could really see internalizing that coming along in that sense was Abdul Carter, in that he was putting together, he was combining what he's physically gifted to do with the knowledge of what to do, how to use it, how to translate that into their defense. And that really manifested after that.
Because there were a couple of guys in that Michigan game that were having alignment issues. And this is where you're talking about the trust part of it. You had other guys then not trusting it, thus trying to make up for it instead of just doing their job. And I think that's what he was probably getting down to there.
Yeah, it's not that he was saying guys didn't, it's just that they didn't trust each other, that they couldn't do their job.
Right.
It's you just had maybe there were certain young players. There were still, you know, there's still young players playing in that game. So if somebody in the gap is not filling the gap next to you, your inclination is to go to the A gap or something like that, or try to cover a zone that you're not supposed to be in because you see an empty space there. You're trying to overperform in some ways, and that's a correctable thing for coaches. And then if they find somebody who's trying to overdo something, they can then turn around and say, look, just your job. Focus on your job. And that's exactly, I think, what he was saying.
Right, and that's what it comes down to. Now, you watch the game on Monday, and as it's playing out, what were some of the thoughts as you watched it play out?
Some of the things I was thinking were, first of all, John Clifford was so good on third down. There was a lot of control to that. I didn't think I was thinking this until the big play. But there was you know, he was really controlled on third down, threw some really good passes on third down. I think he was 5 for 5 at one point on third down, converting for, you know, and converting first down. So they were really good there. Then they would try to go hurry and get into that tempo, and it just didn't quite work. I mean, I think he maybe just missed Mitchell Tindley on a deep ball. So they were getting, I think, where it looked like they wanted to run that tempo on first down, weren't quite getting there. And then you saw the Nicholas Singleton play, obviously the big run. But I think what the most fascinating thing to me was the touchdown pass to Keandre Lambert-Smith, because that was a third down. And it was a third and medium. And after the game, Mike Yurcich was really fascinating in talking about this. He said that was not a third and medium play. Obviously, you know, from the 12-yard line, you're not going to run a double move. That's not going to be in your call sheet. Third and four, double move, big play. But they put it there because of the defense that Utah was playing and because of what they had done to kind of draw Utah up into that defense is trying to stop the quick passes. He threw a couple of really nice quick on a slant to Tinsley, Mitchell Tinsley on third down to convert. And he saw that. And, you know, it was, you know, a really fascinating quote that I thought from Mike Yurcich says, okay, we're going to call it and say, all right, we're going to hope for the best. And thus was born the longest touchdown pass in Rose Bowl history by Mike Yurcich hoping for the best. I thought that was fascinating to me.
It's interesting because there was a lot made, and justifiably, of Utah's win over USC, not just once but twice, and the second one being the Pac-12 championship game. Yet I'm watching the tape of that just to get a real feel on personnel, and what I saw is that Clark Phillips is a fabulous corner, and there was nobody else out there I thought could play for Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I'm watching the tape. Because look at all the wide open gaps USC had in the game. And that was the Lambert Smith play. Same thing. They made the same mistakes there they made in the Pac-12 championship game in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No doubt. The other thing that I kind of turned to, you know, I think Utah made a big deal, and I think people made a big deal about Utah offensively, really not allowing sacks. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they were something. I mean, they led the Pac-12. They were allowing fewer than, it was like less than a sack a game. I don't remember, you know, exactly some of the numbers. And Penn State had 6. Now, some of that came after Cam Rising got hurt, and naturally Manny Diaz is going to attack the backup quarterback. So that was, you know, that certainly was part of it. But even without that, even before that, I mean, Cam Rising was under, before he got injured, hopefully, you know, that's not as long-term an injury as Kyle Whittingham kind of made it out to be after the fact. But they got after him, and they might not have gotten to him because he's just a tough quarterback to sack. But they turned him, you know, they put him under duress to the point where, I think, what, 8 of 20? 8 of 21, something like that? I mean, he's
8 of 21 from 95 yards. Yeah, 8 of 21, 95 yards, and one of them was where Wilson slipped and fell down, and the ball was short.
Right, exactly. It was underthrown. Yeah, that was half his yardage. It was the 47-yard.
Yes.
Play, and that was one of those plays that Manny went all in. I think he had an 8-man front, just and everybody that left a single, and you saw Marquise, like, lose his footing a little bit, and Belly kind of made a nice adjustment to that ball, but that was. I mean, that was kind of the extent of their offense. Again, outside of, I mean, they ran the ball really well, and I think Penn State kind of had some, you know, ball game tackling issues. But for the most part, corralled them, I thought pretty well.
Obviously, one of the differences in this season for Penn State that they had not had since Journey Brown happened to be the two freshman running backs. And the breakaway ability each one has, especially Nicholas Singleton. When you saw that run that he made where they really faked out the secondary just by the quick look to the sideline, what was your thought watching that play?
Saquon, Kajana?
Yeah,
How does your mind not go
yes.
to that, you know, in that stadium? the very similar things. Nicholas, I mean, Singleton's run was just that burst that Mike Yurcich and James Franklin always point to. That when he can just get into that gear, he can go. And I thought one fascinating thing, I think it was Brenton Strange after the game, an interesting point he made was that Sean Clifford did something at the line of scrimmage. I'm not exactly sure. Kind of fuzzy about what he was saying. But Sean did, he made some sort of adjustment at the line of scrimmage that moved, somebody on Utah's defense just enough.
Holbert, the safety. It was coming up like a cover zero look, and Sean was able to get them into the,
Right, and that was just enough for Brenton to get leverage. And just those little things, that was a big-time Nicholas Singleton play, no question about it. But that's the kind of stuff I think under the radar you're going to really miss about Sean initially, that he those kinds of things that he was able to do. I mean, I think he, on the third down throw to Lambert Smith, he was kind of nudging for that play, too, based on what he was seeing from their defense, that they were giving up, that they were going to now come in and try to take away the medium throws. And they knew they were going to have it. Like you said, there was a corner that Keandre could beat. So all of that stuff, those are the things that Penn State's young quarterbacks are going to have to learn how to do. And for all the flack Sean has taken over his career, I think there's probably dozens of moments like that we just really don't know about. Just little illustrations of moments that he has made a difference in a play, and that might not have gone 87 yards. It might have only gone 8 yards, but that 8 yards covered a first down or got him into field goal range or got him out of trouble, whatever it might have been. I think those kinds of things that Sean has done that take time for quarterbacks to learn.
This was the first real opportunity for the media to talk with the freshmen. What were your thoughts on them as communicators, as people, because it was the first exposure you really had to talk with them?
I had high expectations for them because they're all polished football players and they come from good programs, and in the day, the age of NIL, they are going to have had dealings with stuff like this. They've done appearances, they've met fans, they've negotiated contracts, things like that. So I knew they were going to be really good. Drew Aller was phenomenal. One guy I really liked was Bo Prabula.
Yes.
He had a real sense of competitiveness about it, but he also had this almost like mentorship under Sean Clifford. One thing I've heard great leaders say across all walks of life is one of the best pieces of advice they've gotten is to have a mentor. And Bo, I think, really kind of took that, because he spoke really glowingly about Sean Clifford and things that he's taught him, things, how to approach a practice, how to approach a post-practice, what you're going to look for in film, when you're doing a specific drill, when you're doing whatever it is, a three-step drop drill, a five-step drop drill, make sure that you are actually performing that drill. Don't cut a corner when you're doing stuff like that. And he was really eloquent about talking about Sean in that sense, and I found that to be a really good insight into where he's coming from, because he wants to compete for that starting job too. So he took it upon himself to, not saying that Drew didn't, but it just in discussing Sean with Bo, he really kind of he tried to make himself available as much as possible to Sean, and I think Sean really appreciated that. And he said he developed a really good relationship with him. And they're 6 years apart. That's a tough age difference. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing when you're 24 that you just kind of want to dismiss an 18-year-old. But Sean did not do that. I mean, he really went big brother on him good, and I think that's going to pay a lot of dividends for Bo.
Moving forward, because obviously they'll be back in class on Monday. Eventually, winter workouts will start, then spring practice. What are some elements you're looking for already with this football team that everyone needs to be watching for as they move forward and develop?
Yeah. I think that, you know, basically what I just said about Bo is going to extend with the quarterbacks, with Drew and Bo. When are they going to be able to do those little things that Sean can do? I mean, we've watched Drew throw the ball, and it's pretty awesome stuff to see what he can do throwing a football. But how does he manage a football game? One of the James Franklin's biggest praises of Sean is that he manages a football game, and that kind of gets sometimes that gets taken as a pejorative, that you're calling a quarterback a game manager, and that's a negative thing. And maybe in some cases it is, but there's a lot of positives to that. You can be a phenomenal thrower of the football, and if you're not a good game manager, it doesn't matter that you can throw the ball 65 yards on 3rd and 8. If that's not the right play, that you're supposed to be running on 3rd and 8. So that, to me, is going to be the main thing. And then I think the two guys on defense that I think are going to be so important for them to try to figure out a way to manage without a P.J. Mustipher and Jair Brown. I thought it was phenomenal that Sean and Jair Brown finished out the careers the way they did. Jair had a phenomenal game. He had a phenomenal
season. Yes, he did.
But that was an unbelievable football game from a guy I thought might play 30 snaps. You know, the kind of thing that James Franklin had said throughout the week, well, with the guys who are leaving, we can manage snaps for them. And Jair was on the field most of that game. I know that there was some, they had an injury at the other safety spot, but Jair played. And he went all out in that game, and he had an absolutely phenomenal Rose Bowl. That was the cap to a college career that, who knows, 3-4 years ago, who knows where it would have been, and to see where he has come. Those are the kind of players to me that I look at and go, that's a harder thing to replace than you think, even with the 6th-ranked recruiting class in the country and the 14th-ranked recruiting class in the country. Those kinds of guys are difficult to find. They're difficult to replace. Not that they're impossible, but it always takes time to get young players to where they know as much about football and as much about the game as Sean Clifford and Jair Brown.
Well said. As always, Mark, thanks so much. Great work as always. I always look forward to talking to you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully see you Sunday.
I'll see you Sunday down at the Palestra.
Never been there. Looking forward to it.
Oh, Mark, you're going to love it. It is, first of all, it's going to be loud. It's going to be sold out. It's just, you feel like you're going to go from the Rose Bowl, one iconic venue, to another one that's going to be pretty cool.
I hadn't thought about that, but that's pretty cool. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Mark, thanks, my friend.
Yep, appreciate it, Steve. Thank you.